Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. My co-host and producer is Sophie Schlesinger.
Hi, everybody.
And Jack Inslee and Carlos Salguero are holding it down in the booth, making sure technology works. Thanks, guys. So today's show, we are getting back to our series, which we've kind of abandoned as of late.
State of Cheese.
The State of Cheese. And we are pleased today to be talking about the State of Cheese in Oklahoma.
Very exciting.
We're going to have two segments. On our first segment, we're going to have Susie Thompson and Steve Reynolds, owners of Forward Foods, which is an artisan cheese and food store in Oklahoma City, and they just opened one in Norman. And then in our second segment, we're going to be talking with Matthew Birch, owner and founder of Urban Agrarian, which is a small-scale distribution business designed to connect artisan foods to chefs and shops that buy them.
Yep.
So before we get started, Sophie has gleaned some fun facts about Oklahoma.
Quick facts, yeah. So, okay, first we'll do music. The state rock song is Flaming Lips, Do You Realize?
That's so cool.
Yeah, I think we might play during the break. Oklahoma is the 20th largest state in the U.S., covering an area of 69,898 square miles. So it's vast and pretty big. It's the 27th most agriculturally productive state. It's the fifth in cattle production, which is probably not a surprise, and fifth in production of wheat. However, the state beverage is milk.
Woohoo!
Yeah. So, without further ado, here we go.
So now let's talk to some real people from Oklahoma. Susie and Steve, are you with us?
Hi. Yeah.
Hi. Thank you guys so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having us. It's such a treat.
Oh, it is a treat for us.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, the cosmos have aligned us in many ways before this. As Caroline Denham, who was our former intern, used to work with you guys, and Sasha Ingram, now Sasha Anderson, is married to Mike Anderson, who works with us. I feel like the world is small and cheesy.
Yes. We've got our cheeselings off in the universe.
You've sent them off into the universe.
Yeah.
Well, so how did you both wind up in cheese? Can we talk a little bit about your background for just a second?
Sure. Well, I had a sort of a food media background living in New York for a number of years. I worked for Martha Stewart Living and for the Food Network, and I worked with cookbooks. And we returned to Oklahoma for family, but the opportunity was just so ripe to do something different in food. So we opened an organic cafe at first, and that sort of transitioned via little cheese pop-up sales into a full-scale cheese shop where we do have a full-service cheese counter. And cheese is just, I mean, it's just so easy to pick. Once you think about doing cheese, it's really easy to go with that because it's so wonderful and everyone loves it, and it's easy to sell because everyone
it speaks
wants
for
to eat
itself.
It,
so. Yeah.
And now, were you from Oklahoma originally, or is that when you said you went back for family? Did you grow up there?
Yes.
Okay.
Both of us grew up here.
Cool. Very cool. And so is Steve on the line as well?
I am.
Oh, great. Okay. Sorry. All of a sudden, I was assuming, and I was like, wait a second. I don't know if I heard two voices or one. So how did you get pulled into this whole cheese melee?
Well, when we moved back, I started working at a bank, and it just wasn't the ideal fit for me to work in a bank. It's a little state there, and I feel a little constricted there, and the idea of opening our own business really appealed to me.
That's really awesome. That's really awesome. So, and now you have two locations, is that correct?
Yes. Our first location we opened about 6 years ago, and that was actually our Norman store. And then we opened our, but we're in the middle of moving that original location, like literally in the middle. Wow. I'm watching Movers as we speak.
Wow.
And then we opened our Oklahoma City location about a year and a half ago.
Wow. So it must be doing pretty well. I mean, how did customers first react when you guys opened the store? Has there been kind of like a surge in cheese appreciation in the area?
I think definitely there has been. I mean, I've always felt that if you get, it doesn't matter how what kind of exposure people have to fine foods or, you know, quote unquote, whatever, if you get the product in their mouth and they taste how wonderful it is, anyone is going to like it. So we didn't have to be in a, you know, classically sophisticated area to attract a lot of fans. And I feel like we've really turned a lot of people on, and people have been very receptive to our approach to selling cheese, which is very sampling oriented, very information oriented, very friendly and not pretentious, which is a word I kind of hate to use, but you know what I mean.
But it's so important. I feel like, you know,
I feel like they've been very receptive.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like a lot of, you know, gourmet foods, quote unquote, can fall into the pretentious category in some way, shape, or form. And it's so important to kind of make sure that element is just absent.
Yeah. It's got to be absolutely absent. And I think that was definitely an approach that we appreciated and definitely wanted to take along with us. So reducing the intimidation factor is key, because when people walk up to a case full of unfamiliar items and they have to talk to someone and ask questions, it just is intimidating. I mean, I was intimidated the first time I went to a cheese shop and
sure.
had no idea what to ask. So we just really try to engage customers in a friendly, easy way. And I think we're pretty successful at it.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of had that thought the first time I ever heard the name of your shop. I just think it's a really great name. Like, instead of kind of using the organic, local, sustainable, compostable, whatever,
yeah.
grab bag of words. I like it. Forward.
It came off the Wisconsin quarter. If you know the Wisconsin state quarter, the Wisconsin state logo is forward. It has a cow and a piece of cheese on it. And a banner that says forward. And that's where we got it.
Well, that's so cool.
I love it. I love that story.
I love state quarters, so, because I'm a dork.
Well, that's the tie that binds us all together.
Yeah,
aren't we all? So, can you tell us a little bit about your selection? Where do you source from? And can you tell us a little bit about the cheese making scene in Oklahoma? Is there a lot of good local dairy and cheese?
You know, Steve, if you want to jump in, feel free. I don't want to dominate the conversation.
Okay. Well, on the cheese-making scene, a lot of the cattle in Oklahoma, even though the state drink is milk, a lot of the cattle is beef cattle here. And there's just the infrastructure built and the business built for beef cattle is very strong in Oklahoma. I don't know if it's because of the grain, the type of soil, but the Oklahoma City stockyards are the biggest stockyards in America in terms of number of cattle that go through. And so the dairy cattle has kind of taken a back seat, and then most dairy cattle or dairy farmers are signed to the consortium, the ADA. And so their cheese production is, if there is any, it's usually on mass market selection. It's slowly changing. There's a fine sheep's blue producer in southern Oklahoma. There's in northern Oklahoma, there are a couple of farmers who are trying to do different things. And so it's slowly changing. There are always people coming in and asking for rennet, and we're trying to help foster cheesemakers here. We sponsored a cheese making competition at the state fair, and
that's
hoping,
great.
There'll be more response to that.
Tell us about that. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Cheese making competition at the state fair. Is that like where the 4-H everyone puts out their cakes or their preserves? You did the same with cheeses.
Yeah, that the first year was pretty minimal participation. But we did, we put out, the biggest prize was for a naturally rinded cheese, mm-hmm. just to try to get people out of the block cheddar rut. That, you know, there's perfectly good block cheddars out there, but so the second one, the first one we just did was sort of a test run, and we didn't have a whole lot of participation in it, so we're hoping that the next year we really kind of have learned what we need to do to get the word out to you know, farmstead cheesemakers
And wannabe cheesemakers who just need the push in the right direction.
Yeah, yeah. They need the, yeah.
Some so prize
we
were, money.
That's why we had the biggest award for a naturally aged cheese, and you know, to kind of try to make that award enticing to really sort of kickstart things.
And now,
hopefully, that'll happen.
Yeah, that would be very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it would.
And Susie, now I'm looking at an article that you sent me last week that's actually about a monastery in Oklahoma where they're making cheese. Do you guys know anything about that? I tried to find some more information, but it seems pretty, like they're pretty...
cloistered?
Yeah.
Just kidding.
That's been my experience. I haven't, they're really, they're hours and hours away from us. They're in the opposite end of the state from us. I haven't had a whole lot of luck getting information, but I probably could try harder. But I've heard people tell me that their cheese is really good, but they only buy it from them, and they have events at their monastery where they sell it, and that's where people have gone to get it. So I'm really intrigued because from what I understand, it's sheep milk, Gouda style, and I do love the sheep milk. So I want to try to get more information. It's just been tricky.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's sure. really interesting. Do you know what order of monks they are or anything like that?
I don't. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. Now I'm just like, I don't know, the monks. They just like pop up in the strangest places. Like there's monks in Kentucky, the monks of Jessamani.
That doesn't narrow it down. But,
but that's really fascinating. Well, I know, so you're educating people obviously in your store by giving them taste. You're educating people at the state fair by exposing them to this idea that there could be natural rinded cheeses. And then I know that you also do some classes in education at the store. Could you tell us a little bit more about the programs that you guys offer at the shop?
Absolutely. What we do is we have a cheese and wine classes. Sorry, I'm moving away from the movers. we have cheese and wine classes who... taught by our education coordinator Bailey, who's really, really fantastic, and we all participate in the classes to a certain extent, but she's really taken it on. And every class sells out. We have cheese and beer pairings, which Steve actually handles at a local pub, and then we do cheese and wine. We do cheese and we had a request for non-alcoholic pairings, and we have focused. Country classes, you know, cheeses of Portugal or
and cheese Vermont. 101 classes as
and,
well.
Yeah, and the cheese 101, which always are very popular. So those seat about 24 people per class, and we fill them up, and people have a good time, and it's been a really good way to educate people about it. And we get an opportunity to make them taste what we want them to taste, because we get to pick the cheeses, and that's also a nice thing. It introduces people to some of the more handmade cheeses that we might have a hard time selling just from the case.
Get people away from the black cheddar a little bit, just into more adventurous stuff.
And I like the idea of doing the beer and cheese at a bar instead of, like, a lot of times here it's in a more formal setting, like a restaurant or, you know, a private space. Yeah, but just do it at the bar. That's good. Simple, effective.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yep.
So, actually this is Sophie's question, but I'm going to read it cause it's right here. she said you're very active on Twitter, which, you know, I'm still trying to figure out. I'm like such a dork. I don't even know the half of what goes on Twitter, but, how do you think Twitter, affects your business? And, do you guys, really sort of use that and other, Facebook and the rest to kind of keep people posted about what you're doing at the shop?
Oh, yes, definitely. It's a great way to let people know. I mean, you know, you just, it's, I, was at American Cheese Society when you, Anne, were talking about your weekly emails that you sit down and send out, and it's just kind of like that, but in briefer forms, mm-hmm. and it's a great, quick way to get your idea out to, you know, thousands of people.
Yeah.
And you know, Facebook is the same. And also the interactions on Twitter, I mean, it makes it easier for people to find out if we have something in stock, and it's just it's a way to let people know you're responsive to customers' needs and wants.
That's actually an interesting aspect of it, the fact that you know, it is like a very interactive thing, you know, if you're creating that dialogue, it's a lot different than just putting an email out there, because yeah, people do ask questions in real time and expect to get answers, and it's just a really useful thing.
Yeah.
Sophie's taken over our Twitter because I've given up. She's really good at it.
Well, it's a valuable resource to, and it's easy and quick. And also we can connect pretty easily with other cheese shops. I mean, the people we follow are people in the cheese business, so I like to keep our kind of timeline or whatever it is sort of simple, and things that we might want to retweet to our customers who are wanting to know about cheese. And we're not like retweeting every compliment our customers give us. We're retweeting things that I think our customers will actually be interested in. Rather than just a, hey, you guys are great, sort of, you know, repeating that.
Which is always really nice to hear.
Yeah.
But it's fun to kind of, I think it keeps the industry sort of connected too. So I like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, speaking of Twitter, can you give us your Twitter handle and your website so people can find out more about the shop?
Absolutely. It's at Forward Foods. FORWARDFOODS.
Okay.
And the website is forwardfoods.com.
Forwardfoods.com. Right. And it is a very cute, beautifully designed website.
Yeah,
Love it.
Thank you. Yeah. We have a very talented graphic designer friend who saves us.
Hey, you got to have one of those up your sleeve. Absolutely. Well, best of luck with your move into the new space. It sounds like things are going along just beautifully.
I was kind of wondering why that person won't stop thinking.
It's good. No, it's
progress.
Like, progress. Yeah. Things are happening. But thank you guys so much for taking time out to be on the show. And
our pleasure.
We hope to have you back on for a future episode.
We'd love it.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Today's program was brought to you by Fairway Market. Whether you are cooking for one or for a crowd, Fairway Market literally has everything you need for a fantastic meal. But if you don't feel like cooking, no worries, they cater. Check out fairwaymarket.com for more information, and be sure to check the new blog, On Our Plate, for weekly specials, health tips, and recipes. Do you?
And we are back.
So dramatic.
I'm cutting
today.
The curd. I know. So dramatic. That's such a great song. Yeah. Who knew? Flaming Lips are from Oklahoma. That's yeah. great. So we are Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. My co-host and producer is Sophie Schlesinger. And our second guest is Matthew Birch, who is the owner and founder of a company called Urban Agrarian, which is a distribution company designed to get foods from small producers to the chefs and shops that love them. Matt, are you on the line with us?
Here I am, ladies.
Excellent. So you are the missing link. I feel yeah. like we've been talking about your job description for the past year and a half, yep. 2 years, and I just don't know.
Sweet gig.
I think it comes up in every show.
It comes
almost.
Up in every show. It does. Everyone's like, but the distribution network is missing. So yeah. tell us a little bit about your business and how the heck you decided to do what you do.
I started about 4 years ago. It's coming up on 4 years. And I had been working in restaurants and in produce sections and on farms, just kind of slowly learning, you know, the bigger picture. And when I moved back from Savannah, Georgia to Oklahoma City, I knew that I wanted to try to, you know, make a go of having some sort of local food distributorship. So I bought an old Frito-Lay truck, you know, a step van that was converted to run on waste vegetable oil. So I was able to keep my costs low, and I just kind of started there, running routes to farms, making deliveries, and it's grown from there. Over the course of 4 years, you know, we've still got the veggie van, we've got a cargo van that runs on natural gas, and we recently were able to get into a brick-and-mortar space that's got a certified kitchen on site, it's got cold storage, we've got a little market up front, and loading docks to come in and out, you know, with receiving and deliveries.
Holy moly. Brilliant. So yeah. from a Frito-Lay truck bought secondhand to a brick and mortar space with a prep area and loading docks, that's pretty impressive. So would you say to anybody else trying to get into this business that there is in fact a way to make it work financially and make a go of it?
I think, you know, we were capital lean, still are. So we found ways, A, sweat equity, you know, be ready for some long hours, but I think it's the same way no matter what kind of entrepreneurial venture you get into.
Yeah.
And B, the more you can find your essential infrastructure on Craigslist and at auctions and secondhand as opposed to, you know, trying to shop showroom floor, you're going to give yourself a lot better shot.
Now, for you guys, what's been the biggest challenge with regards to infrastructure? Have there been any things that you guys find vital that have been hard to find that you could, you know, give our listeners some insight on?
I think the tricky part is just matching supply with demand. Mm-hmm. When you put yourself in that position to tell a chef or anyone that, you know, I'm a supplier of local foods. You've kind of got responsibilities on both the supply side and the demand side. You know, you're kind of working with farmers to get certain crops planted and to estimate how much of a certain product you would want or need. And then on the other side, you've got to kind of communicate, give a clear vision to the purchasers what the supply line looks like, what the quantity yeah. looks like. You know, it's like grass-fed beef. Okay, we're going to put this on the menu. We want to run ribeye steaks. And, you know, you've got to be able to give them some idea of for how long they'll be able to do this volume or if it's beets or, you know, fresh produce. You know, if someone is going to make a commitment to put something on a menu or carry it in a store, that's been one of the hang-ups that we've had just through the course of this is it's like, sometimes we'll have a ton of a product and we get out there and we push it because we know that it's okra season.
Right.
Well, occasionally we do really well and we kind of outstrip our own supply and then mm-hmm. we're kind of left there going, huh.
Yeah.
so that's the tricky part is this isn't a bunch of t-shirts sitting on a warehouse shelf somewhere, you know, and it's a lot of relationships, you know, the small family farms, local farmers, as well as this kind of diverse group of people who want to purchase local food.
Absolutely. It's a lot of relationships to manage. Can you tell us a little bit about your network? How many farms did you start out with? How many do you work with now? What kind of range of products do you carry? I know you said produce, obviously, and meat, but are there other products you carry as well?
Yeah, definitely. Meats, cheeses, dairy, you know, yogurt, a lot of different types of fresh produce. And then we work really closely with Earth Elements, which is a local food processing kitchen. So they do a lot of jams, jellies, relishes, stewed tomatoes, as well as prepared foods like pizzas that down to the crust are local ingredients. Oklahoma whole wheat topped with, you know, a homemade tomato or pesto sauce, topped with local cheese, and then whatever toppings. So, you know, fresh baked breads, really the gamut of products that you would be used to finding in a grocery store, we get our hands on. A lot of it's seasonal, so it comes in and out. I think at last count, we've dealt with about 84 local food operations, everything from apiaries to ranches to farms to, you know, folks, like I mentioned, Earth Elements that do value-added or, you know, prepared foods utilizing local ingredients.
Wow. Wow. That's really, really cool.
Yeah. We need, like, 100 more of these throughout the country.
I know. Do you take interns if people wanted to come and work for you for free? Would you give them a hint as to how to start this kind of business in the Northeast or in the South or in the West?
Oh, I'd love it. Yeah, I'd be all about it. And I think that I'd probably learn some things as well, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't come into this with a PhD in local food distribution, you know, just kind of a passion for it. And
there are so many people who have those, though. That's unbelievable.
What are you talking about?
I know, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, we just need to get all these kids with the PhDs in local food distribution to join up with us, and I think we'll be good.
We solved it.
Yeah.
We're done.
One of my favorite parts, it really is the fact that we started with this truck that runs on waste vegetable oil, and we are continuing to find ways to utilize that resource and to, you know, we're getting into creating biodiesel out of the grease as opposed to just running it straight. Mm-hmm. I really love that part of the infrastructure. You know, it's like the icing on the cake. It's the cherry on top.
Yeah. How?
The fact that we're doing all this and we're utilizing this waste product to fuel the operation.
Which could be a huge, you know, that's a huge expense. Fuel is a huge expense. So
massive.
I mean, I think you just hit on something huge there, because anyone who's thinking about starting a distribution business, you know, obviously the truck is a big expense, but then the gas is probably, you know, the bigger going concern.
Yeah, the gas will get you more than the truck. You can look on Craigslist. I don't care what town you live in. There's old diesels. You know, a lot of these commercial vehicles that were used in the early to mid-90s, are just sitting around. That, you know, there aren't a ton of people that have use for a 24-foot Frito-Lay truck. So the value of purchasing that thing, you know, you'd be surprised at how cheaply you can purchase that large a piece of equipment.
Right.
It's after that. It's keeping it on the road. You know, it's the 10 miles per gallon that tear into you pretty good.
Absolutely. So can you delve into that a little bit more? Because my grease refining knowledge is little to none. How do you guys go about converting this vegetable oil into biodiesel? I didn't even know there was a difference.
Yeah. So waste vegetable oil, you can run through a diesel engine. It requires some heaters, you know, to kind of make the grease a little more thin. You pre-warm it before it goes into the engine, but that works just fine. What that requires is a secondary tank and some other pumps and kind of this secondary fuel delivery system.
Mm-hmm.
But what you can do is you can take grease and add a methanol. Basically, you're going to do some pretty simple chemistry, and you're going to agitate waste vegetable oil with a methanol solution, and you're going to end up with glycerol, which is a basic ingredient for soap making, and biodiesel. That's kind of, you know, the short version. You're going to throw these things into a tank. You're going to agitate. You can find simple biodiesel processors online, a lot of different places, and look into it. We were able to get ours from a local restaurateur. He sold it to me for a song. I love the guy. and so we need to build a little shed to house this thing. And then we're going to be doing, instead of just filtering the grease and using that, we'll be legitimately making biodiesel.
That is
a whole new evolution.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
And I never took chemistry in high school. Somehow I managed to escape without it. So that was that was very interesting.
Yeah. I do suggest that you, like, find a chemist, because some of this is, you know, you want to ventilate. I mean, it's not Tinker Toys. I mean, you can hurt yourself. You could cause a probably large fire. You know, it's not something that you just kind of dive in on day one.
Sure.
Which is one of the reasons that we've been slow to move to that. But if you do have a chemist and somebody that knows what they're talking about. It's pretty simple on the grand scheme of things.
Wow. So now you've got your truck. You've got it full of biodiesel you've made yourself. How do you route your pickups and deliveries?
You know, it's kind of as simple as using Google Maps, you know, just having these relationships with the farmers. You kind of cluster them into kind of a regional group. I mean, regional on a much smaller scale than we normally use the term. But, you know, so we'll have a northeast route. Up around Tulsa, Oklahoma is what they call green country. So there's a lot of good agricultural land up there. And you'll just kind of go up there and make a big loop and pick up from everybody that you need to, head back home, and that's your Monday route. And then maybe you have a south route, a south loop for Tuesday, and an east route for Wednesday. And you just play with different ways of running those routes and making them work.
Wow.
And that sort of thing is actually a lot more efficient than if they all drove that into the city. You know, you take the comparison, even if I was using normal diesel, you take the comparison of, you know, me starting in Oklahoma City, running this route, picking up from, say, 8 to 10 food producers and coming back to the city, as compared to all 8 to 10 of them coming to Oklahoma City, making their deliveries and
sitting
heading
in traffic.
Home.
Yeah. That's really amazing. That is so cool.
Yeah.
We need to find some people and come hang out with you and learn about this.
We really do.
This business. It's a really cool model. Well, if people want to learn more about your business, we always run out of time too quickly on this show, but how do you have a website? Do you have a,
urbanagrarian.com is our home website. We're pretty active on Facebook and Twitter. And those three would be, I think, the main ways online to reach us and communicate with us, or just kind of take a cursory view of what we do on a daily basis.
Fantastic. And is there anything else you want to tell our listeners that we forgot to ask you? Because I'm sure there are like 5 million questions that we forgot to ask you.
Well, I thought we were going to go into a whole bunch of cheese. And I will tell you that there is, if any of your listeners come to Oklahoma, you've got to go to Swan Dairy in Claremore. It's a dairy. It's a pasture-based dairy that started in 1923, thereabouts, with one cow. And now it's a nice operation, pasture and dairy on site with a small market, and they've got some really amazing cheese.
Swan Brothers Dairy in Claremore, Oklahoma.
Swan Brothers Dairy, Claremore, Oklahoma.
Thanks for the tip.
Yeah.
Well, Absolutely. You are an inspiration. It's been really fun to talk with you and hear your passion and all about what you're doing, and I just feel like, you know,
the missing link.
You're the missing link. Thank you. I'm so glad we found you.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me on. It was great fun.
All right. Well,
anytime.
We will be back next Monday with another episode of Cutting the Curd here on the Heritage Radio Network.
Bye.
Have a good day, ladies.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.